Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many years ago, Riley Knight completed a degree in history. This proved to be a bad move, as it was absolutely useless for him. Until now, here's some half-assed history.
What's going on, mate? Great to have you along for some more half-assed history. This week on the agenda, giving me a chat about the extinction of the poor old dodo, a bird that used to live on the island of Mauritius off the coast of Africa in the Indian Ocean. And I say it used to live there because it doesn't anymore. We turned up in our ships and we promptly drove the dodo to extinction very speedily, very efficiently. Firm handshakes all around, another job well done by humanity. We killed off the dodo in record time. It took less than a century for us to wipe them out completely. And as tragic as the tale of the dodo obviously is, it's also very interesting for quite a few reasons, as we'll get into. Firstly, in hearing this tale, you'll learn about how centuries ago, scientists and naturalists didn't really believe in extinction. Or no, it's not even that they didn't believe in it. They couldn't even conceive of it. It was an unthinkable idea that we humans could possibly eradicate an entire species, but the extinction of the dodo helped us to revisit this idea and realize the full consequences of our actions. Secondly, the story of how and why the dodo went extinct has a couple of details you might find very interesting. The common conception of us just, you know, hunting them and eating them all isn't actually, it's not quite true. We're obviously still the root cause, make no mistake, but there were other factors that we brought on that were a little more important in the dodo's extinction than just, you know, turning him into our dinner. And thirdly, let me tell you this, the poor old dodo has been maligned wrongfully for centuries. It has suffered a terrible reputation for being a, you know, foolish, dumpy and clumsy bird. Too stupid to survive, you may have heard. So dumb, they didn't even run away from the humans brandishing weapons as they approached to hunt them. Well, there is a lot more going on with this aspect of the dodo's story than you might realize, and a lot of the common conceptions we have about this poor bird are completely untrue. All the lies and slander that the dodo has suffered since its demise, monstrously unfair, especially as it's not even around to defend itself these days. So today, we're going to talk about all of these things and more. We'll talk about the evolutionary history of the dodo. We'll talk about the history of human contact with the dodo on Mauritius, which, you know, won't take long. It's only very brief. And we'll also, of course, talk about the consequences of its extinction and, as well, a good deal besides. So a lot to get across today as ever. But before we begin, thanks go out to alert listener Toby Pope for this terrific suggestion. Cheers, Toby. Always keen to get stuck into some history that isn't, you know, biographical or about a war or a battle. I don't mind getting across stuff like that, but it's nice to have a bit of variety. It's nice to get across some other topics every now and again. So once again, thanks very much, Tobes, for the suggestion. A terrific one. And if you want to get in touch with one of your own suggestions, of course, halfasthistory.net, use the contact form there to let me know what you'd like me to look into. Anyway, let's get into it here. It's time to get underway with the sad tale of the extinction of the dodo. Here we go. We're going all the way back here. We're going all the way back to around, give or take, you know, approximately, you know how it is, 10 million years ago. Yeah, a lot further back than we usually go, I think it's fair to say. But to tell the full story of the dodo, that's where we have to begin, because it was around 10 million years ago, give or take a million or two, that a species of pigeon-like bird was flying around across the Indian Ocean when, oh, what's this? They spot an island poking out of the water below. So some of these birds, they fly down, they land on the island, and I'll tell you this, they must have thought to themselves, bloody hell, check out this absolute bloody paradise we've found for ourselves here. Today, we call this island Mauritius. It is found east of Madagascar. It's one of the Mascarene Islands. We'll come back to the history of Mauritius in a little bit. Hang on. But paradise is a very accurate description for this island. You can go and look at pictures of the place. My goodness, it looks incredible. Beautiful white sandy beaches, clear blue water, lush palm trees, beautiful waterfalls and coral reefs and mountains. It is exactly what we would think of as an island paradise. But these barbarous, philistinic, pigeon-like birds 10 million years ago, whose appreciation for the aesthetic sandy beaches and stunning waterfalls is nowhere near as developed as our own, they probably considered it a paradise for slightly different reasons. Firstly, it was teeming with all sorts of delicious food for a hungry bird, especially a bird a bit like, you know, a pigeon, which, as you've probably observed, will eat just about anything. Seeds, fruits, nuts, vegetables, bugs, bits of plastic, small stones, bits of your shoe, whatever they can get their beaks into, really. And this island had an abundance of food for these birds. But, better yet, it didn't result in the birds themselves then becoming food for anyone else. Like some other remote islands on the planet, like Aotearoa New Zealand, for instance, there are no species of land-based mammal native to Mauritius, only bats and sea mammals, neither of which tended to eat dodos. So once these birds set up shop on the island, there was really nothing else there that wanted to hunt them down and eat them. There were no major predators on the island that could hope to tuck into a dodo. They didn't have to avoid any large land-based mammals that wanted to make them their dinner. There weren't any large birds of prey for them to contest the island with. And so, really, it was a paradise for them. It was perfect. There was lots of food. There were no predators. These birds had it made in the shade. And so, realizing a good thing when they saw one, these birds, they stuck around. And of course, they adapted to their new environment through the process of natural selection and evolution. And to hear more about that, have a listen to episode 287, Charles Darwin Get Across It. But the long and the short of it is that throughout countless generations, across millions of years, this species underwent gradual but consistent change. They grew from small pigeon-like birds. They became larger and heavier. Their beaks were embiggened while their wings were ensmallened. And now, ordinarily for a bird, this would be a problem, right? Big problem, as flight is a bird's most important line of defense in avoiding predators. But there were no predators to predate on this bird as its body grew heavier and its wings grew smaller. The fact that it ultimately became flightless didn't really impart any evolutionary or biological disadvantage on it. It adapted very efficiently to its predatorless environment. It became chunky, muscular, and heavy. It could zip about on two little stumpy legs, foraging in the undergrowth for, you know, delicious bugs and worms and small rocks to eat. And in adapting and in evolving this way, this species of pigeon-like bird became, of course, the dodo. And we'll talk more about what exactly the dodo looked like and what their habits and behaviour were a little bit later on in the episode while we're talking about their ultimate fate. But they are endemic to Mauritius. They're not found anywhere else on Earth. And for millions of years, the dodo was just big chilling, hanging out, no predators to bother it. They're all having a great time. No humans lived on Mauritius, not until relatively recently, as we're going to talk about. So the dodos had the run of the place. They were just one of hundreds and hundreds of species endemic to Mauritius. Again, not found anywhere else. We bloody well changed that, didn't we? Oorah! So when did humans first arrive on Mauritius? Despite not being settled properly by humans until the 17th century, Mauritius had a few temporary visitors here and there. There were no permanent human inhabitants for a very, very long time, but Arab merchant ships are known to have stopped by as early as the 10th century, and the Portuguese also came for a visit in 1507 and set up a little base, but for whatever reason, the Portuguese didn't seem all that interested in colonizing this uninhabited island paradise, and so it wasn't until the Dutch arrived, first in 1598 and then into the 17th century, that the island was permanently inhabited by humans. The Dutch set up a colonial settlement and sadly populated it with people that they'd enslaved, brought over from Madagascar, setting up tobacco and sugarcane plantations on which the slaves were forced to work. And it was the Dutch that also gave the island its name, naming it Mauritius after Prince Maurice, or Morris, of Nassau. Mauritius is one of the very few nations on Earth that is named after a real person. There's the Philippines, obviously. All the countries with Saint in the name, like Saint Lucia or San Marino. There's Saudi Arabia, even the continent system of America, and therefore countries like the USA, the United States of America, they take their name from a real person. We think Amerigo Vespucci, the explorer. But there are plenty of other nations as well, including, of course, Bolivia, named after the great Simon Bolivar, episode 213, get across it. Anyway, Mauritius would eventually become a French possession in 1715. They took it off the Dutch, along with the nearby island of Reunion, Isle Bourbon back then. But then it fell into the hands of the British in 1810 and eventually would gain independence in 1968. Today, it remains an independent, fully sovereign, unitary parliamentary republic, considered to be the only full democracy in Africa, and it's often ranked as one of the most peaceful nations on Earth. But I tell you what, the dodos would not have agreed with that particular assessment back in the day after we rocked up, because life was anything but peaceful for the poor buggers once humans came along. The Arabs and the Portuguese who first visited Mauritius, they didn't leave any records of having encountered dodos on their first visits. The only indication that the Portuguese might have seen dodos is the fact that they initially named the island Swan Island, which, I don't know, it's pretty generous to dodos by all accounts. You know, swans, known as elegant, graceful creatures, they seemingly have little in common with the chunky little stumpy-legged overgrown chickens that were the dodos, but hey, maybe the Portuguese were just trying to be nice. The Dutch, though, once they had set up shop on Mauritius, they wrote reports about the island's wildlife, which included descriptions of the dodo. And as the dodo was completely extinct before the end of the 18th century and probably a fair bit beforehand, these reports written by early visitors to and inhabitants of Mauritius are really the only things we have to go on in studying much of the history of this poor animal. Although, honestly, the first Dutchmen to encounter the dodos back around the turn of the 17th century, they weren't all that interested in the scientific implications of the discovery of this new species. Instead, they were more interested in the gastronomic implications and whether there would be good eating on one of them things. As these human visitors made their way ashore to hunt the dodo, they found that these birds were completely fearless of them, too. Dodos didn't run away as humans approached them, as most wild animals might, because why would they? For millions of years, dodos had lived peacefully on Mauritius, nothing hunting them, nothing to fear from any other animal whatsoever. So why would these strange, hairless, overdeveloped chimpanzees be any different? Well, many dodos learnt the hard way that humans should indeed be feared, although they didn't get much of a chance to put that lesson into practice, as they were roasted, boiled, braised, fried, or otherwise turned into dinner for hungry sailors. There are differing accounts of how dodos actually tasted. Apparently, they weren't great, but not terrible either. And I imagine after months at sea, you'll take anything other than hardtack and salt beef. But as more and more humans came to Mauritius, some took a more scientific interest in this strange bird and left us with reports of things like its behaviour, its diet, and other things that we're unable to study now that it's extinct. But there are aspects of the dodo that we can still study today based on surviving remains. In 2002, the DNA of the dodo was sequenced, for instance, giving us new understandings of them. But for the most part, much of what we know about dodos was written during the very brief period between our first encounters with them as a species and their consequent extinction. And because of these accounts, which aren't always the most scientific or accurate in nature, even today we labour under a lot of misapprehensions about the dodo. What the dodo really needs is a good PR agency. Well, actually, no, forget about that. What they really need is a time machine or a sufficiently powerful necromancer. But failing that, they do need a PR agency for a full image rebrand. Because when you think of a dodo, I mean, I've already played into this cliche, right? Chances are you think about them being foolish or stupid, too thick to run away from predators, too idiotic to avoid their own extinction. There are reports of these birds being so dumb that they would mistake rocks for food. That wasn't a gag before what I was saying, right, about them eating pebbles. According to eyewitness accounts, dodos actually did eat small stones. Sometimes these idiot birds eating rocks thinking it's food. Oh, my goodness. They've been depicted as clueless and clumsy, thick as a post. And, you know, I would say some people have painted them as being almost deserving of their fate, which is a very unkind view to take of these poor creatures. But honestly, they never had a chance, because even the name we gave them is unkind. There are two competing theories as to how the dodo got its name. The first is from the Portuguese word doido, which means crazy. Or alternatively, the name may come from the Dutch word dodas, which means fat ass. So neither of these origins are particularly nice to the poor old dodo, painting them either as fat or stupid, and in the time since then, we've very regularly portrayed them as being both of these things. But dodos weren't fat, and nor were they stupid. We tend to paint them as being such because, you know, they're too thick to run away from us, very obviously being predators, hunting them down and popping them in the frying pan for dinner. They wouldn't even run away when we approached, but they had no reason to. They had no reason to fear predation after millions and millions of years without ever experiencing predator-like behavior. So why waste evolutionary energy on a defense mechanism for predators when there just weren't any they had to deal with? Dodos didn't need to protect themselves. They didn't need to protect their nests, their eggs, or their young from anything. And so when predators like us finally arrived, they just had no idea what sort of trouble they are in, and therefore they didn't run away from us like most animals do. That's not stupidity. That's the result of very efficient evolution in adapting to a given environment. And as for the stereotype that they were fat and clumsy, this is almost certainly false as well, because it seems very likely that the stereotype that they were, you know, big, chunky, fat birds came from people who encountered captive dodos that were very deliberately being fattened up so as to be eaten. Or alternatively, from people who only ever saw a poorly stuffed specimen that didn't actually give an accurate impression of the bird's actual size and shape. It's thought that the weight of the dodo fluctuated between the warmer and cooler seasons, as is the case with many, many animals. But rather unfairly, the idea that they are these, you know, fat, clumsy, stupid birds has stuck, and rather cruelly, it's something that we often play for laughs. It's particularly cruel when you think about the fact that we're the reason they're not around anymore. Even the idea that, you know, they ate rocks, and that's evidence of how stupid they were, right? Mistaking rocks for food. Even that is a misapprehension that we've done nothing to really dispel, based on a behavior that was actually, from the standpoint of evolutionary biology, a very sound thing for them to be doing. They didn't eat rocks because they thought they were food. They would swallow little pebbles to aid digestion. The little stones would sit in their gizzards and help them grind up and digest food after it had been swallowed. And if this sounds ridiculous, let me tell you this. There are plenty of other species of bird that still do this, from chickens to ostriches, as do, interestingly, crocodiles and alligators, seals and sea lions. So dodos weren't stupid. And with that new understanding, we can discuss the accounts that were given by those lucky enough to encounter them when they were still around, before we drove them to extinction, and talk about what dodos looked like, what they ate, how they behaved, and all the rest of it. Now, again, none of this is guaranteed to be 100% accurate, what with the early 17th century biological sciences not necessarily possessing the same rigor that they have these days. But all the same, we can try to paint a bit of a picture here. The dodo was a large, ground-based, flightless bird, maybe 60 or 70 centimetres tall. And while they weren't necessarily fat, they were still pretty hefty specimens. They were built like brick shit houses, up to 20 kilograms or perhaps even more for the absolute units amongst them. And it's thought that they were pretty strong and muscular and also quite quick, which we'll come to. Their feathers were dark, probably greyish-brown or maybe brownish-grey, with green beak, yellow legs and feet. The males tended to be larger than the females and have bigger beaks. And as I sort of alluded to here, they were probably faster than we give them credit for. There's a possibility that their legs may not have been as short and stumpy as most people tend to think, as I sort of joked about earlier. contemporary illustrations of the time when the dodo was around seem to make out that they were, you know, short, stocky, with stumpy little legs. But modern skeletal reconstructions suggest that they actually might have had longer and more upright legs. Maybe they just had bad posture. Maybe they, you know, always hunched over on the lookout for particularly appetizing pebbles. I don't know. But in any case, plenty of illustrations and drawings and paintings from the time the dodo was around that have survived will give you something of an indication of their appearance, although there is a little bit of inconsistency between the contemporary illustrations from the 17th century. As for their behavior and diet, let's get into that here, although, again, there's not a huge amount of highly accurate scientific data to go off. A lot of conjecture, but we think that they lived in highly wooded areas where food was plentiful, and so as a result, very rarely had to fight or compete for resources with one another. They nested on the ground. They laid one single egg per clutch, which, once again, they never had the need to protect from any predators or scavengers until we came along. And their young developed very quickly, reached full size and sexual maturity in just months. As I mentioned, they didn't flee from humans like most birds do these days, and in fact, they were known to sometimes stand their ground when humans approached and snap at them with their large beaks. There are reports of that having happened every now and again. But if they were to run, it is thought that they could be very bloody quick. There aren't contemporary reports of their speed, but modern scientific analysis of their skeletons and their build indicates they really could fire along on those legs of theirs. And they ate all sorts of stuff. Fruits, nuts, seeds, roots, crabs, shellfish. Honestly, whatever they could get their beaks into, really. And when taken into captivity by humans and fattened up for food, the dodo also seemed to be happy to munch away on more or less anything, just like pigeons will these days. But once more, let's take all of this information with a grain of salt, because a lot of it is based on incomplete information and guesswork. Educated guesswork, certainly, but guesswork all the same.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But now let's turn our attention to the ultimate fate of the dodo, its extinction, and talk about the factors that contributed to this extinction and the things that took place after the dodo had been wiped out. Now, it's very easy to say that human contact with the dodo was the reason the species went extinct. It's very easy indeed to wheel out that as an explanation, and the reason it's so easy to do so is because it's absolutely true. The dodo population was perfectly stable before we rocked up, and there's no doubting that it was our arrival on and settlement of Mauritius that drove the dodo to extinction. However, it wasn't just us killing and eating them. In fact, it's thought that that didn't actually play too much of a role in the dodo going extinct. It certainly didn't help, and while humans did hunt dodos as they were, you know, a filling, if not necessarily all that tasty meal, it was actually the wider disruption that humans represented to the Mauritian ecosystem that really hastened the demise of the poor dodo. Because with humans and their ships came too the animals that they'd brought with them. Animals that, in Mauritius, quickly became destructive, invasive species. Pigs and goats were brought ashore, and those that escaped into the Mauritian wilderness quickly and profoundly disrupted the local environment. Predatory animals like dogs and cats would have found the dodo to be a very appetizing and very easy meal. Even the rats that snuck ashore from the ships that they infested would have been delighted to find enormous, succulent eggs laying unguarded in nests on the ground. And believe it or not, even the monkeys that the sailors brought with them, principally crab-eating macaques from Southeast Asia, devastated the Mauritian ecosystem and, like the rats, feasted on the succulent eggs of the dodo. They became egg-eating macaques, I guess. So before we go too hard blaming ourselves for the extinction of the dodo, let's just bloody remember that all these pigs and goats and dogs and cats and rats and monkeys were just as bad, or honestly, worse, really, if we're going to play the blame game here. What's that? Whose fault is it that they got to Mauritius in the first place? Oh, mate, okay, look, let's not play the blame game here, okay? No, look, more seriously, we do have the misapprehension that it was us that ate the dodos to extinction, when that probably isn't really the case. We did hunt and eat them, but for most of the 17th century, there were never more than, like, 50 people or so on Mauritius. And as hungry as visiting sailors would get, they would have had a hard time killing all the dodos on the island. So no, it was actually things like the disruption of the local ecosystem, the destruction of their habitat, a new competition for food sources with other animals, and the introduction of predators. All these things. Now, us hunting them obviously didn't help, but there were other much more significant factors in play when it comes to their extinction. In fact, some modern scientists suggest that other natural processes were at work in endangering the dodos as a species, climate change, flooding, that sort of thing. But that seems a little unlikely, considering the dodo stuck around for so many millions of years before we arrived, only to die within decades as soon as we did. Sometimes the most simple explanation is the best one. But here's something we don't know. When it comes to the dodo, the exact time at which it ended up going extinct. There are a few reasons for this, one of which was the fact that those in Mauritius, those observing the birds, couldn't really conceive of an entire species of animal being wiped out. This sounds ludicrous to us these days because, as we all know, of course species can go extinct. There are a great many people and a great many very successful businesses that are working very hard to do exactly that to a great many species all around the world through to this very day. But back then, people felt that the natural world was more or less immutable and that you could no more eradicate a species of animal than you could, I don't know, a mountain range. So people at the time, they weren't monitoring the dodo as a species to see how it was faring in the struggle for survival, whether its population was sustainable, in what ways human impact was changing things for this poor bird. And for this reason, we didn't really notice it go extinct any more than we can pinpoint the time that it finally went extinct. The last confirmed sighting of a dodo was in 1688, less than 100 years after the Dutch first landed on Mauritius. But even by the end of the 1630s, dodos had become quite rare. So just think of that. Within 40 years, you could go from landing on the Mauritian shore and just, you know, walking up to a dodo to club it over the head for your dinner, to never really seeing them out and about in the wild. In fact, between 1638 and 1662, there are no reported dodo sightings. 4 decades after we'd arrived, we'd already more or less wiped them out. They'd basically just disappeared. It's thought that the dodo ultimately went extinct before the turn of the 18th century, or if not then, immediately afterwards, in the very early 1700s. These poor bloody birds, they had no idea what hit them. One day, they're cruising around their island paradise, nothing to worry about apart from choosing whether they wanted fruit or seafood for dinner. And then we come along and it's GG, no re. But it's what happened next that will truly shock you, because you're not going to believe the general response to the loss of the dodo once it went extinct. As was the case with all sorts of species of animal exotic to Europeans, the dodo was packed up and shipped back to Europe so it could be displayed and examined by curious observers. And not just to Europe, either. Across Asia, there was one dodo that made it all the way to Japan. Not many live dodos were sent around the world, only maybe 10 or so, but plenty of dead specimens were sent off, some of them stuffed, some of them in pieces. And these specimens were responsible for many of the misconceptions that we still have about the bird. as most contemporary depictions of the dodo from the 17th century were made by artists who had actually never seen one in real life. So while they weren't quite using their imaginations, they were drawing from a dead and possibly poorly stuffed example of a dodo in conjunction with all the misleading information passed on by various eyewitnesses. All the same, this contributed to the reputation of the dodo, the reputation that we've already debunked, and it helped to build the common conception that we still have, broadly speaking, today about the bird. However, given how quickly the dodo died out, and given how few specimens actually made it all around the world, again, you're not going to believe what happened once it finally went extinct. Because due to the scarcity of samples sent back to places like Europe, people began to believe that the dodo wasn't actually real, that it never existed in the first place, that it was mythical or legendary, like a unicorn or a chupacabra, especially after France took control of Mauritius in 1710, at which point French naturalists and scientists, who were intrigued by reports of this giant ground-dwelling bird, they began to visit the island to study the dodo. They'd heard so much about it, they wanted to find out for themselves. And so they arrived, and they hunted up and down for these flightless big pigeons, and they found nothing. And so as a result, right, they began to believe that the dodo had just been made up. But of course they didn't find anything. All the dodos were dead, mate. We'd killed them all, whether we meant to or not. But this wasn't the conclusion of these naturalists, to whom the idea of extinction, as I've mentioned, was essentially inconceivable. They instead concluded that people had just imagined them. That, at the time, seemed more plausible than every single one of these birds being wiped out. So, for a while there, the dodo was in truly exalted company. It was hanging out with the Pegasus and the Griffin, along with all the other fictional animals that we've dreamed up, you know, the stuff of folklore. But of course, in time, this impression was overturned when more and more evidence of the dodo's existence finally began to emerge. Not just the samples and the specimens that had survived, but new ones that were discovered in Mauritius as well. Sub-fossil remains, as they're known, not old enough to be fossils, but not young enough to be, I don't know, leftovers. Subfossil remains, they began to be discovered in the mid-19th century, and these bones were used to reconstruct the dodo's skeleton. And so the post-extinction study of this poor species began with a rather more scientific bent to it this time around, especially as extinction as a concept had been confirmed as something that actually took place by this stage by the French naturalist Georges Cuvier in 1813. Which, of course, revolutionized our understanding of the natural world and the species within it. Now, it was understood and accepted that the dodo could indeed have been wiped out, and it became pretty clear pretty quickly that we were the ones what done it. But as we've talked about, this didn't rehabilitate its reputation. The dodo became known as a chunky buffoon of a bird, one that, as I mentioned, was almost deserving of its fate, too stupid to survive. Perhaps this was the salve that we applied to our guilty conscience about having wiped this bird out, but also probably not because, I don't know, people in the 19th century didn't tend to take the most sympathetic view of issues like these. It was probably more played for laughs than it was anything else. But funnily enough, when it comes to playing on the dodo's reputation for laughs, funnily enough, this took place in a book that we talked about just last week in the most recent Popular Saying Show, episode 3, I won't get across it. This book made the dodo even more famous than it had been before. The book is, of course, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. In this book, a dodo features as a character. It's the one who presents Alice with her own thimble as a prize for winning the caucus race. And in the book, the dodo is portrayed, largely speaking, as a bumbling fool. And more broadly, the idea of the caucus race and the dodo's role within it is seen as a political commentary on the British political system. But we don't have to get into all of that. Essentially, the dodo was ridiculed in this book, and it helped to cement its reputation as a bumbling fool. But it was around this time also that the dodo picked up another another association, one that's much more important, one that is equally enduring, and one that I think is a lot more appropriate when we consider this bird and its ultimate legacy. Because the dodo also became a symbol of extinction. And I actually could have done this last week, couldn't I? There were sayings that emerged. There were phrases that came to be because of the dodo and what we did to it. Dead as a dodo, it's a well-known saying, as is going the way of the dodo. These sayings indicate that something is finished or it's obsolete or about to become so. But all the same, even as a symbol of extinction, the dodo has been for centuries remembered as an animal that was too stupid to live, which I think is enormously disrespectful to this animal. Maybe it wasn't the most noble or inspirational of species, but that doesn't mean the dodo isn't worthy of our respect. Although it's a little too late for that. We're shutting the gate after the horse has bolted and gone extinct. Today, you can visit places like the Oxford University Museum of Natural History in Britain or the University of Copenhagen Zoological Museum in Denmark. You can go and see some of the very few remains that have survived from the time that the dodo went extinct. But there's not much. A dried head or foot, a skull, more or less all the stuffed dodos in museums around the world aren't actually really stuffed dodos. They're made with the feathers of other birds. There's really not a lot left over from the time that the dodo was alive. There are near complete skeletons that exist that have been more recently excavated, those sub-fossil remains that I was talking about. I've seen them too. I've visited places like the Natural History Museum in London. I've seen these reconstructed skeletons. But it really is a shame that we didn't show the same amount of interest in and respect for the dodo when it was still here with us. As a symbol of extinction, as one of the most well-known symbols of extinction, the dodo serves as an important and honestly quite unpleasant reminder that our actions as humans, as the dominant species on this planet, very much have consequences. 99.9% of known species have gone extinct across the broad stretch of the history of this planet. We can't take credit for too many of them. Life has been around on Earth for a very long time, and so as a consequence is death, and we're not at the centre of even the tiniest fraction of the extinctions of all the species that have lived on this planet. They've come and gone as epochs have passed, and again, across the vast span of the history of this little planet, most things that live on it don't do so for very long in the grand scheme of things. But that's no reason to be careless with the life that does exist here and now, to uncaringly hurry the demise of the species that we share our planet with. Because today it's estimated that a quarter of animal species on Earth are threatened with extinction, most commonly because of habitat destruction, exactly what the dodo went through hundreds of years ago. The woolly mammoth, the thylacine, the western black rhinoceros, the golden toad, we bear the responsibility for the extinction of these animals because of our wanton disregard for the natural environment of this planet and countless other species besides. I hope we've learned a lesson from the dodo. Sometimes it really doesn't seem like we have, but I hope other critically endangered species don't go the same way. The black rhino, the mountain gorilla, the African forest elephant, the Sumatran orangutan. At least we're not out there trying to eat gorillas and orangutans, or most of us aren't, as far as I know. But it took us losing the dodo to begin to wake up to just how dire the consequences of human activities can be when it comes to the disruption of natural ecosystems. And it's good. It's good that there's much more awareness of the role that we play as a species in the destruction of natural habitats and the extinction of species these days. It's good that we're taking at least a little bit more responsibility for it, because driving a species to extinction isn't as simple as, you know, not being able to go and see a cool animal in a zoo. Extinctions cause huge and irreversible damage to ecosystems, and not always in the most obvious of ways. For instance, a huge proportion of the plant life on Mauritius is also being driven to extinction, or has already gone extinct, because of the disruption that we've caused to the Mauritian ecosystem. The loss of one species like the dodo, or the giant tortoises that were also once found there, it has meant that the seeds and the fruits of certain plants that these extinct species used to eat aren't being dispersed as they once were around the island. And that's just one example. Generally speaking, across the centuries, humans have not been very good for most species of animals that we've come across. Except cats, I guess. Cats have done pretty bloody well out of us. I think that's probably fair to say. But the dodo serves as an example of the damage that we can do to the natural world and a reminder of our responsibility as custodians of this planet to mitigate and repair that damage as much as we possibly can. And when it comes to the memory that we have of the dodo, the reputation that we've given it, and its legacy as a symbol of extinction, I hope that this episode at least will help you revisit some of the stereotypes that I'm sure you've been exposed to over the years and help to turn around the image that we have of this poor bird. Because after all, the dodo never asked for and certainly didn't deserve the fate that we inflicted upon it. But that's it. That's all she wrote today, sports fans. That is the tale of the extinction of the dodo. A sad, a tragic tale, but also a cautionary tale, and one that still serves a purpose as a reminder and as a warning to us, as I say, particularly in our role as the dominant species on this planet. Anyway, all the boring housekeeping stuff now to close out the show, starting with, of course, a social media update. Thank you to everyone who is following the show on the various channels, on TikTok and Instagram and on Twitter. You can find the show on all of these half-assed history, except on Twitter or X, where it is half-assed histore with no Y. Wouldn't fit. Very annoying. But yes, thank you to all the people out there who are following the show, and hopefully you're enjoying the stuff I'm posting. Post stuff three times a week, roughly, little videos about the various episodes that I've made. People have commented saying how they're a nice reminder of some old favourite episodes, or a good signpost for some of the funnier, more enjoyable episodes to get across in the back catalogue. So go and check that out. You'd be a good egg if you went along and followed me on any of these channels. But I want to draw some attention to some particularly good eggs who have been who have come out of the woodwork. Now, I will say, in the time since I've recorded this and you've listened to it, probably a great many other good eggs have come forth and done exactly this. But this episode was recorded ahead of time, almost a week ahead, in fact. And many exalted patrons will be listening to it almost a week in advance. Patreon.com/halfhousehistory if you want access to that. But I want to thank all of the people who have gone to one of the social media channels, or all of them, and left comments along the lines of, give this man a book deal. That was the call to action last week, and my goodness, haven't you all acted? There are so many comments on so many posts that are variations on the theme of, give this man a book deal, including from alert listeners. These are the ones who got in with comments before I recorded this episode. So apologies to all the ones who came along later. We'll check in a later time. Friend of the show, Alec Lancaster. Good on you, Alec. Seagoff Barbara, In Your Kitchen with a Dam, Butt Fireson, Good Life Graphics, Neve_Kelly, 2 underscores again. What's going on there? Choice As from Across the Ditch. But I very much appreciated alert listeners, Griffin Schaefer, 2A, and David Kybe, who have gone through and commented just exactly what I asked you to, give this man a book deal, on every single one of the posts that I've put up. So good on you, those three. Thanks very much for that. But the comment, oh dear, my favorite comment out of all of them, from this last week at least, came to us from Justin Lothamer, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but I can certainly pronounce the comment that Justin made here for us all to enjoy, because Justin wrote, again, at my request, I guess, I can only really blame myself for Justin's actions here, because Justin commented on one of the posts by saying, this man has a face for a book deal. So thanks very much for that, Justin. That was, oh boy, here's a real shot in the arm for the old confidence there. Appreciate it, mate. Good on you, Jada. Anyway, I mentioned earlier Patreon, and I want to thank the people who have signed up for Patreon this week. Glassy Witch, Har Mobile, Michael B, and in particular, Samuel Whitehead, signing up at the highest tier. Good on you, Sammy. So thank you very much to those exalted patrons and all the others who, of course, are keeping the lights on here at Half-Assed History HQ on the Sunshine Coast. And by the lights on, I mean just the you know, electricity bill for my residential home because I make this show in my in what was beforehand a spare bedroom. But all the same, thank you very much to the Patreons for being there through thick and thin. And of course, enjoying, I hope, access to all sorts of exclusive content, behind-the-scenes stuff, show notes, uncut episodes, and early access. As I say, this episode came out about a week ahead of time. And if you want to listen to episodes like this ahead of time, you too can join the exalted ranks of the Patreons. Before we wrap up, one final quick thanks once again to alert listener Toby Pope for this terrific suggestion. Halfasthistory.net, use the contact form there if you want to follow in Toby's footsteps and send in your idea for a topic. I can't guarantee that I'm going to get back in touch with you, but I can guarantee that I will read your email and have a look into whatever you suggest. And maybe it'll be you who will be behind one of the episodes that I put out in the future. And if you don't have a topic suggestion, it's always good to hear from listeners, get some feedback, let me know what you've been thinking about, what you've been up to. Always great to hear from people, so thank you very much to all the people writing in. Anyway, that's enough of that. I've never liked long, meandering outros in podcasts, and now I am getting into the habit of delivering them, so I apologize for that. Let's wrap things up nice and quick here, and I'll see you back for more nonsense in a week's time on Half-Ass History. Until then, leaving you with a question posed on Reddit. Of course, this one comes to us from Praying Mantis Pro, who has an extinction-related question for us here. Praying Mantis Pro wants to know, how did the thesaurus survive the dinosaur extinction?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.